Welcome to Pulp Tales, fascinating stories of the pulp magazines and the creative minds that brought them to life. The fictioneers, the artists, the editors, and others. Brought to you by the PulpNet. Learn more about the pulp magazines through articles, blogs, bibliographies, links, over 100 episodes of this podcast, and much more at the PulpNet. Your link to the pulp magazines for almost 30 years. Online at thepulp.net.
Read some of the stuff in The Spider, whether it's what Will has done recently or what Norval Page has done or some of the other writers, and you go, this is outrageous. There is no way. Allow me to give you a real life example. Al Capone was an extraordinarily wealthy man, and he had a lot of the stuff that I read about in The Spider. For example, in his one of his many offices, he had a bulletproof chair. He has a secret elevator that goes from his penthouse down into the secret subfloors of the basement. He had secret tunnels that took him to various hideouts that had various garages. So it's kind of Doc Savage-y. So you're like, well, this is just Pulp Fiction. Well, I mean, it's Al Capone. He was a real person.
In this episode of Pulp Tales, collector and former intelligence consultant Tim King explores the cloak and dagger of the spy heroes in the pulp magazines. This Pulp Tales was recorded at Pulp Fest 2024 in Pittsburgh on Thursday, August 1st, 2024.
As I look out in this crowd and I've sat in on some of the other presentations, I realize that all of you know more about what we're going to talk about than I do. And that's okay. So a little bit about me. I'm a moderator on some of the Shadow Facebook pages like Shadow Knows and Shadow Strikes. I'm active in some of the Facebook pages like Pulp Heroes and others because I love the pulps. Will Murray drugged me into other parts of pulpdom that I had not been to before. Don't rush the stage, but I really didn't read Tarzan until Will wrote it. Don't leave. And of course, The Spicy Thing was all new to me, it's a wonderful book if you haven't picked it up. I was on the Ohio State's varsity fencing team for almost a whole week. If you've not read Mike Grell's John Sable, it is a very pulpy comic book, and the hero there is a pentathlete, which involves fencing. It didn't really work out for me. I've beaten the former vice president in a foot race. We've had many former vice presidents. Which one of recent memory seems the least athletic? Here's a hint, he invented the internet. Yep, 1997 Marine Corps Marathon. He was not prepared for that except for the photo op portion. But that's not really why Mike invited me. He invited me because for over 20 years, I was a contractor for the U.S. intelligence community and special operations, and the majority of my career was as a special agent for the Defense Intelligence Agency. So I can talk a little bit about the spy part of this, but I suspect all of you will know a whole lot more about the characters that we're going to talk about. So I'd like to make this, you know, more interactive rather than a traditional talk with the questions at the end. So as we go along, please feel free to raise your hand and we'll get that out there. Mike said, look, what I don't want is I don't want a 45-minute talk that's full of a dry recitation of facts. So don't do your usual deep dive into the hundreds of pulps that are out there and the analysis of the stories. That's my personality. But what I did do is I picked up some books, and I'll have these afterwards if you want to look at them. It's absolutely amazing to me what went on in the 1920s and the 1930s and the 1940s. In the U.S. intelligence community, whether it was domestic or overseas, things that would never fly today, and things that you would recognize from the pages of pulps. Maybe you read some things in The Spider or other things, and we'll get into that, and you're like, there is no way. No, actually, they did dumb stuff like that all the time. So I'll have those up here. The first one is a biography of William J. Burns. I know that just leaps to mind. William J. Burns was the head of the Bureau of Investigation before a young accountant named J. Edgar Hoover made it the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And he was kind of famous for being a private detective, using a lot of clandestine means. But he also really pushed the use of the dictograph, what we would call audio surveillance today. And the other one that really blew my mind was actually an autobiography of Don Wilkie, a U.S. Secret Service agent. Before they were primarily known for protecting the president, they actually ran around in the U.S. primarily and did all the nonsense that you've read about in the pulp. So let's take a look. The way I'd like to approach this, because Mike gave me a short list of about 320 different pulp stories and pulp people, is I said, well, what if Mike was a cutout for a mysterious mastermind who was trying to assemble the pulp version of the Impossible Mission Task Force? What would that look like? Well, having gone through a number of the books and pulps that Mike gave me, American Agent, Fact Spy Stories, Girl from Uncle, Intrigue, Peter Barron, Spy Novels, Spy Stories, you get the idea. I was able to cut out many of them because we just don't, you know, the Impossible Mission Force is tight, we're focused. So there's only gonna be a few that we cover, and we're gonna cut some out because, well, you'll see why we're gonna cut them out. Sound good? So here we go. The first one, notorious, infamous Operator 5. Now this is a no kidding intel service. He works for the U.S. Intelligence Service. I mean, that's the name. Lots of tradecraft there. He has a real name. He has gadgets and gizmos. And if you really want to know a lot more about that, come here tomorrow, I think about the same time. And Kurt and Tom, are going to dive into that. But I do want to put a few things out there. One is he works for the Secret Service. And you may think that some of those villains that he fought were sort of over the top. Many were just domestic, but many were, you know, foreign sponsored, thinly veiled for the time. But all the stuff you see in there, all the crazy nonsense about secret identities, aliases, disguise kits, those were all done. In particular, I would recommend this book by Don Wilkie about the U.S. Secret Service. What's different during this time that isn't a factor here is that the Secret Service agents would actually pay for it all out of their own pockets. So you would go undercover to go cover an illegal strike in Oklahoma. So you would travel from Cranberry or Mars or Pittsburgh, whatever we are, Pennsylvania, on your own dime, go establish your own identity, and then eventually when you got done with your task of investigating whatever, then you'd submit a voucher and eventually you'd get paid. Imagine trying to do that today, it would be really tough. Now, I don't want to get into it too deep, but I would say that Jimmy Christopher is pretty awesome, right? I can relate to him because he's also a fencer. His fence is his belt. My belt is not a spring steel saber. He does do some things that I don't recommend. Carrying WMD in a ring on your finger all the time, not ideal for clandestine operations, especially when you're punching. It can get really awkward. And then I would say that although I'd read some, I really, again, don't rush the stage, I really got introduced to Operator 5 from Will's first book, first Spider book, Doom Legion. And then I don't know if you've picked up his most recent one, Hangman from Hell. I brought that with me so I could finish it while I'm here. It's a lot of fun, and spoiler alert, Operator 5 may make a comeback. But all the rest of the stuff, I can't tell you because Pulp FOIA wouldn't release the rest of the stuff. Anything else about Operator 5 that anybody want to bring out? I do have two pieces that I want to, but go ahead.
Yeah, I read an anthology collection starring Operator 5, published, I think it was by Moonstone. It was in it, he teams with several pulp heroes to fight a bit of what's essentially a conspiracy based on a real thing back in the 20s and 30s called, I'm sorry, I have it up. Give me it up first.
Sure. Is it the Purple Legion? While he's looking that up, let me share with you what separates an intelligence operations focused story from what cut out some of the many that were possibles, right? They're primarily detective stories. So there's two aspects while he's looking that up. The first is intelligence and spy operations revolve around something people in the business call the collection of sensitive non-public information. That's a fancy, lawyerly way of saying getting people to tell you things. So we'll get into some other heroes that are really good at that. But as you read these stories and you find informants either informants that they use violence against or that come forward to the character, or maybe they're using technical surveillance to listen in on the bad guys or observe through physical surveillance, sensitive non-public information is kind of what separates law enforcement, driving your operations and activities based on knowing things that other people don't know, as opposed to more of a traditional, wear a uniform and go do a thing. So sensitive non-public information. The other one that you kind of want to know, not that it necessarily applies to the Pulse, but in today's world, the big difference, the differentiator that they look for is the operation going to be open, like we are going to go into X country and do this thing, whatever that thing is, or cross the line into this world? Are we looking for, is it going to be covert or is it going to be clandestine? Because there is a difference. You're all readers. I think the lady left that was here earlier that bemoaned the demise of the reader. Sadly, I'm with her. 4 kids, 3 are readers. The youngest one does not read unless he's forced to, because he can doom scroll all day long, and it makes me very sad. He's a good reader. He just doesn't do it by reflex. So maybe we need to crack the code on that as a community. How do we get Pulps to this younger generation? But covert and clandestine, similar but very different. Clandestine is primarily what the Defense Department and other agencies do. Clandestine meaning something blew up, but we're not attributing who blew it up or how it was blown up, right? If you think of it like a magic trick, you know a magic trick is happening. You don't know how it happened, but you know you went to a magic show and you watched it go. That's clandestine. Was it the U.S.? Was it the Israelis? Was it the Indonesians? Was it, who was it? But, cars don't just go boom on their own, unless they're Pintos. The other side of that is covert. Now, covert is hard to do. It's more subtle. It's not really ideal for Pulps. But covert simply means you get the effect you want. If I may, Craig, I'm going to quote my hero, Walter B. Gibson. A magic trick has 2 parts, generally. You have the effect and you have the method. The method is what all intelligence operators protect at all costs. You cannot reveal your sources, you cannot reveal your methods, because that's death to all of us, right? We'll set that to the side. That's the method. The effect, if it's a clandestine operation, you can see it. Boom, the car goes boom, or the house falls down, or whatever. But it's a covert operation, which is more subtle. Again, probably not great for Pulps, unless it's really a clever one, is that you get the effect that you wanted, but there's no attribution. You don't even know how it got done. So, for example, rather than shooting at a leader, a political leader, or blowing them up with a car bomb or whatever, maybe they have a health condition, a naturally occurring health condition, and you simply prevent them from getting the health care that they need. You get the effect that you want. That leader is taken out, but it's no longer attributable. Yes, sir?
In the interest of making it interactive, as you suggested, the notion of the impossible missions force, would you say then that the Tom Cruise movies are more clandestine and the original series is more covert?
Yes, absolutely. I'm a big fan of the original series. I think Tony Tolan wrote an essay about how strongly influenced those writers were by the Shadows Network and how things ran, but absolutely. I mean, there's a difference between the printed page and the imagination of the mind and a massive screen, right? So Tom Cruise, massive screen. It's got to do it.
So we already saw a glimpse of your next one.
Uh-oh.
If your Roman Hand figure is going to be Secret Agent X, are you seeing Jimmy Christopher as the Jim Phelps?
Well, let's get to that at the end, and we'll talk about that. All right, so Secret Agent X. I've read a few. Did you find it?
Yeah, it turned out it was not Opera X. It was actually X-11. Operator number five was X-11 that series. And it was
he didn't make the cut.
It was sort of based on the American Liberty League. Have you ever heard of that?
Mike, have I ever heard of that?
I'll show
you later.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
This is my external brain. This is my internal brain. Okay. Okay, so Secret Agent X. I've read a few of these. These are great. If you've not read these before, haven't read them in a while. Who is he? We don't know and we never find out, as far as I know. Now, I have to say, out of all the code names you could give your boss, K-9, I mean, that's... Okay. We have a young yellow lab, and she does run the house, but I would never say that my boss is my dog. So I went through these, and I used a lot of the resources that Mike and others have given me, and I kind of made some notes there. There's some recurring themes that you'll see with all of these high-level spy pulp intel operatives. They all seem to be masters of disguise in one level or another. They're all expert hand-to-hand combatants. Yeah, I can tell you that's not really, that doesn't work. And they can figure out anything with, and if you're a normal page story, you can figure it out with no prior clues because you've got two pages left. So a big fan of Secret Agent X. I would keep him on the team if we were drafting an impossible mission for us. Effective. He could go clandestine, he could go covert, master of disguise, I like it. We're gonna keep him on the potential draft list. Any other comments about Secret Agent X, sir?
Yeah, I think Secret Agent X, at least I hope so, because I wrote a book and he's one of the characters, had the ability to talk to animals or something at some time, so it'd be good for your team.
Yeah.
But are you into, on your team, somebody who has these kind of powers?
We'll take it all. So one thing that is consistent with spy fiction and the video movies, television shows, et cetera, is that you like to have as much variety as possible for a couple of reasons. One is kind of, it allows you, you look at ends, ways, and means, you've got to get something accomplished, whether you're going to admit that it happened or not admit that it happened. And you need to have different ways to pull that off, right? So having a lot of diversity of age, of experience, gender, physical ability, all of that is essential. You don't necessarily turn anyone away. You know, like people like to make fun of Aquaman because he talks to fishes. Well, it's really handy since most of the earth is covered by water, right? So a great guy. So yeah, can he talk to animals? I'll take him.
Right. He also had a girlfriend. I don't know about Jimmy Christopher.
Yeah. He had a girlfriend.
He had a twin sister.
His
sister.
Yeah, and then he had his dad was a retired operator, like right. Operator 9 or something.
Yeah, it was his sister.
I guess we're going down 9. Skip a few 5. Yeah, he had a girlfriend. Those are tough to maintain when you're running around all the time, or spouse.
What was it, Betty?
Someone do the research. Do we have a Betty? We'll do it like an auction. Betty? All right, good. All right. Then we get to potentially someone who's not going to make the final cut. Now, this is King Brady, Secret Service King Brady, his son and the dad. Not to be confused with, soon to appear, RTM Scott, who wrote the original Spiders, also had a series. Secret Service Smith, you know, Smith, Jones, were very creative. Different Secret Service. Again, I recommend these books if you're really interested. These are, I would say, primarily more along the lines of a detective fiction. They're fun reads. They're not maybe as sophisticated and fast-moving as some of the later pulps. But, you know, they're fun. I would track them down. If any of the dealers have one, I might be interested in picking one up. But they have some... more realistic attributes that will take them off of our team. You know, they get nervous under pressure. We don't want that. Not a particularly good shot. Also not helpful, especially depending on where you are in the room. So they may not make the cut. Anybody else have any information on King Brady, which I did not know about until Mike sent it to me? Now, the next 45 minutes will be about the red finger. Red Finger is a backup story, like super short stories behind Operator 5. They're available as a collected edition from, I think it was Altus at the time, now Steiger. The last two novels that Will Murray has done have included new Red Finger short stories, quite good. A couple of reasons I like Ford Duane. So first of all, what a name, Ford Duane. What is his secret hideout? Where does he hang out when he's not busy red fingering?
At the Chevy dealership.
No, not the Chevy dealership. At a bookstore, a used bookstore. Is there any better place to be than a good used bookstore? Lots of tradecraft is the fancy word for the methods that we use to communicate and to do things. Lots of that in here. None of it particularly accurate, but it's fun. It's all in there. And then, of course, why is he called the Red Finger? Well, I think we can all agree that if you're going to be called the Red Finger, your outfit should be gray from top to bottom, which his is. Gray hat, gray mask, like the original Green Hornet, you know, from the eyes down. Gray suit, gray overcoat. Gray gloves, except, who wants to guess? Red fingers, yes. They're a lot of fun. They're quick, they're fast moving. They get to a resolution quickly. Good infiltration, a degree of subtlety on the part of the writer and the hero that is helpful for both clandestine and covert operations. There will be some heroes that maybe that are less subtle that we'll be talking about here in a second. Anybody else? Red finger? I particularly enjoy the fact that they never mention which foreign adversaries and which spies he went up against, but they do rhyme with Germany, Italy, and Japan. I can't say anymore. It's Pope classified. All right, so speaking of less than subtle, the spider. Now, let me just take a moment in defense of the spider. So I had never read a spider story until relatively recently. I cut my teeth on Doc Savage, the reprints. Hey, these are pretty cool. And then someone introduced me to The Shadow, and that was it for me. I was locked on The Shadow the rest of the time. Only over time have I seen the wonders of the dealer's room and all the different varieties. So, you know, you kind of read some of the stuff in The Spider, whether it's what Will has done recently or what Norval Page has done or some of the other writers, and you go, this is outrageous. There is no way. This cannot possibly work. Well, let me just give, from 1917 to 1945, some of my favorite eras in U.S. history. And you say, well, some of the stuff in Operator 5 or The Spider is ridiculous, like that. Or even Doc Savage, like, yeah, it's science, but nobody had that. Well, allow me to give you a real-life example of some of the craziness. I was just reading a spider novel before I got on the road to come here, and then I went, oh my gosh, where have I seen this before? Or where have I seen this true life in history? I think we're all familiar with Alphonse Capone. Yeah, known as Scarface. Do you know how he got a scar, by the way? He made a bad pass at another gangster's girlfriend and sister. So they promptly broke a liquor bottle and carved him up. I don't recommend doing that. But Al Capone was an extraordinarily wealthy man, and he had a lot of the stuff that I read about in The Spider. For example, in his one of his many offices, he had a bulletproof chair so that when he wasn't facing the door, if someone was taking a shot, because you know he was a big fan of tricking people into showing up somewhere and then mowing them all down, And then he would have a public press conference to say, I don't know how that happened. It was horrible, but I wanted to have this press conference so everyone would know that I didn't do it. Is that covert or clandestine? Clandestine, because he's not denying that 45 bullets were flying. He's just saying he didn't do it. So he's got his bulletproof chair. He has a secret elevator that goes from his penthouse office down into the secret subfloors of the basement. And then he had secret tunnels that took him to various hideouts that had various garages. So it's kind of Doc Savage-y. It's also what the spider had with his various places he would hang his 9 million cars that he seems to have. And of course, bulletproof cars. So you're like, well, this is just Pulp Fiction. Well, I mean, it's Al Capone. He was a real person. By the way, that's a public service announcement. Pay your taxes. Or bad things happen. So the spider. Here's the problem with the spider if we're building the Impossible Mission Force. He's not exactly subtle. Right? I mean, I give credit to the married couples in New York because it seems like in every spider novel, roughly 25% of the population is taken out. But by the next story, they're all back and they're ready to be taken out by zombies, mutants, death plagues, robots, whatever. So he's a piece of work. He has a lot of superpowers not normally attributed to him. Rage, hate, discontent, and rage. And this allows him to fight on through incredible adversaries. Now, I will say that RTM Scott, when he was doing Secret Service Smith, there were some ideas that he had, or elements, that carried over into the creation of the spider. So Secret Service Smith also had fought in the war. When he came back, he was dissatisfied with things. He started doing his own thing. So the spider and Secret Service Smith had that in common. Secret Service Smith also had a Indian, I think it was Hindu, manservant, but in the spider he's a Sikh, right? So, and there are others, but you get the idea, right? Like, this seems familiar. But, yeah, we have to use him carefully. Can we use him? Anybody think we can use him? How do we feel about Doc Savage? I see a lot of excitement. I like Doc Savage. I like him with a full head of hair. I like him with his skull cap. I don't have didactic memory or photographic memory, but I think he really only had one espionage-y. He's primarily an adventurer, problem solver, detective of weird super criminals. The very last Lester Denton novel to be published, right? Red Spider. Was that originally In Hell Madonna? Or is that different? In Hell Madonna? Yeah, same. That was espionage. And ironically, when Dent turned it in, the new editor's like, nope, we don't want espionage. We want the old stuff. He's got a lot to your point earlier about, like, don't we want to have a lot of different abilities on the team? What ability does Doc Savage not have?
Can't talk to dogs.
He can't cook. All right, well, we will note that. Mimicry, ventriloquism, inventor, Spock pinch. Yes, sir.
He cannot mimic a female voice.
Where were you when I was putting this slide deck together? I would have kicked him off.
You don't want to know.
Okay. So he has limitations, but he also brings a lot to the table, not the least of which is my favorite superpower, which I do not have, infinite wealth. Yeah. Right? If he doesn't have it, he can buy it or invent it. Pretty handy. So we like this. He also has a sub-agent network, also known as the Amazing Five. So it's looking pretty good. Now, the remaining 300 slides will be about the real spy hero of the pulps, which I spoke about in 2015, and I alluded to in 2021 when I was here again, and that's the Shadow, right? So probably more spy-related stories than any of us can recall. There are a few that I think we all like Zemba, which is a masterpiece of misdirection and a great story. If you haven't read it in a while, you owe it to yourself to read it again. The earlier novels tended to have more spy stuff because it was pulled from the headlines, foreign-sponsored anarchists blowing things up, et cetera, et cetera. But what really gets me about The Shadow, and what really caught my eye later in my life when I found my Steranko-covered pyramid book, having gone through some training and experience, was The Shadow is running an intelligence operation, a counterintelligence operation. He has a spy network. So when we say The Shadow knows, okay, in the radio, and I guess the movie, The Shadow knows because of his psychic abilities. Okay. But in the pulps, and this is a pulp convention, not a movie or radio convention, he knows because he has an agent network, a vast agent network. Some people he can send into Gangdom, like Cliff Marsland. Others, he can, send whoever wants to get a concussion next in to try to infiltrate. He also uses what was cutting edge at the time, audio surveillance, known as the dictograph. It's basically just a microphone on a wire. Do you know who was really fond of using microphones in the dictograph? Secret Service and William Burns. Many, many cases broken that way. So when I read this, I was like, geez, OP, this is like physical surveillance, audio surveillance, agent networks. And he was big on not letting the bad guys know necessarily that he was doing it. If he could take two opposing forces or even just people within the bad guy network and turn them against each other and just sit back and watch them go at it, that's what he would do. So he's definitely in the running for what we're trying to accomplish. Say again?
He's in the running to beat Jim Phelps.
Maybe he is Jim Phelps.
Not Savage is Jim Phelps.
But not in the remake, right? Because in the remake, Phelps was the traitor, which really left a bad taste in my mouth, by the way. Free preview of an upcoming article in the Shadow Circle Pulp Journal. The image on the right is Washington Crime. That is, as far as I can tell, the only pulp reference written by Gibson or any other pulp writers that mentions something that we all assume is there, but he never really mentions, because it's Gibson, right? There's the effect and there's the method, and he never really tells us about the method unless he's misdirecting us. His shadow utility belt is directly and specifically mentioned here, and then why it was that way and where that may have came from, I'll delve into in a future article. But it's the only one that I could find where they actually mentioned something we take for common. Now, Doc all the time, right? Gadgets and vests and blah, blah, blah. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. First of all, old King Brady and young King Brady, we're going to go ahead and let them stand on reserve to help us out just in case we need them. Here's the plan. I think this is one of the best illustrations of The Shadow ever. It's by Mike Kaluta. He's a fantastic artist. He doesn't just do The Shadow, but I love this one because here you see The Shadow as puppet master, pulling everyone's strings, making it happen. What I think The Shadow would do as the Phelps of the operation is he would probably get the spider caught up in it emotionally, find some way to push his buttons, spin him up, turn him loose, and leave him over there. It's very important. Very important. If you could just, Mr. Wentworth, if you could just tell your friend the spider that this needs to get done, and then let him go over there and draw everyone's attention, pull all the opposing force over here. In the meantime, our master of disguise, who can also speak to animals, and Doc Savage, who's pretty handy and infinitely wealthy, and Red Finger, who's actually pretty good at this spy stuff, would be the main team. What do you guys think about that? Would you think we'd win?
Sure.
Would you read that? I'm not going to write it because I'm not a good writer, but that's what I propose. Yep. Okay. So, thanks for joining me. I mean, I enjoyed it. If you want to take a look at these books, you can. You can ask me any question you want about the pulps. If I know the answer, I'll give it to you. You can ask me questions about other topics. The opinions are my own. They are not those of anybody else or any other organization. Sir?
Could you just say a little more about sort of your personal journey, your interest you started with, and how it was brought?
Yep, that's a good question. A completely accidental career. So as a young man, I wanted nothing more than to be an FBI agent. Back before, you know, half of the population thinks they're bad and the other half of the population thinks they're good and fight, fight, fight. FBI was held in high regard. I failed to do my homework. They didn't hire people that were nearsighted the way I was at the time. And so they also aren't particularly interested if you have a degree in criminology. They don't care. You know what they want? Lawyers and accountants. Guess what? I wasn't a lawyer or an accountant. So I went into the Army Reserves as a military police officer. I got very lucky to find a reserve unit in Columbus, Ohio that allowed me to do things that aren't normally done in the reserves, to include assisting in the protection of the Secretary of Defense and executive protection. And Craig, how did I get that job? Because I was tall and looked half decent in my Class A uniform, not because of ability. I grew into it. I had training potential. From there, just a series of right place, right time, and willing to put the work in. I was a contractor, as I mentioned earlier. I was wholly unqualified. If there was a sixth person to the Amazing Five, that would be me. Or if you could imagine Robin the Boy Wonder at a Justice League meeting and everyone's looking around like, who brought the kid? But I was able to learn and do well there. And then eventually, this is my personal opinion, we grew a small training company from a six-person operation to a 600-plus person operation, and quality went down. Decisions were made that I did not support. I was part of a different company, and the one that everyone was talking about that I didn't particularly care for was, it rhymes with Blackwater, and that was kind of clouding everyone's perception of what should be done or could be done, and I just didn't care for it. So I became a Fed, and that's when I became an agent for Defense Intelligence Agency. You know us probably from the Cuban Missile Crisis. We are the ones that helped the president play poker when he knew what all the cards were, because we had all kinds of assets and we were able to provide him that information. And so when you're playing poker and you know exactly what the other person has on their cards, you can do incredible things. Great job, enjoyed it very much. Between the contracting job and the job with DIA, I got to travel all over the world and be part of incredible events, the Arab Spring, the Olympics in Greece, other stuff. Ran around Iraq looking for WMD. Spoiler alert, there isn't any. And a number of other things. So it was a lot of fun. It's a great job, a lot of great men and women. Didn't meet anyone that could talk to dogs, or didn't meet a lot of dog handlers. And it was just a lot of fun. And then in 2014, on a whim, I sent a letter to Jim Steranko. I adopted as my pen name Maxwell Grant, which got me his attention at least. And then we just sort of started corresponding. And the very first time I reached out to Mike late 2014 or maybe 2015, and he said, I don't know who you are, so I'm going to give you a slot where you can't do anything wrong. And I gave my first talk, and no pressure, Anthony Tolan and Will Murray were right there, staring at me as I talked about the shadow to the two people who probably know it better than anyone short of Walter B. Gibson. And then I've just loved meeting all of you and the different types of pulps and the different types of expressions of pulps, pulp journals, pulp collections, blogs. It's just good stuff. Thank you.
You've been listening to Pulp Tales, fascinating stories of the pulp magazines and the creative minds that brought them to life. Brought to you by The Pulp Net. Learn more about the pulp magazines through articles, blogs, bibliographies, links, over 100 episodes of this podcast, and much more at The Pulp Net. Your link to the pulp magazines for almost 30 years. Online at thepulp.net. Subscribe to Pulp Tales on your favorite podcast platform, or listen to us on the web at thepulp.net. If you enjoy our content, please like us or leave us a review. And tell your fellow pulp fans about Pulp Tales. Thank you for listening, and keep reading the pulps. Pulp Tales is copyright 2024 by William P. Lampkin.